are on the line. Live on Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga, and in Auburn on ESPN 106.7, or online on FoxSports983.com and ESPNAU.com. You are on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Daw. Join the show by calling in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
You're on the line with Noah Gardner and Brady Summersell on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. Happy Tuesday afternoon, everybody. Hope everybody's work week has started out well. 2 to 4 p.m., we are here with you on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. If you want to join into the show, call in at 334-321-1390, as well as you can text the show at 334-564-1840. Brady, how you doing today, my man?
I'm doing well, Noah. How about yourself?
Calm, cool, collected. Hey. Brady Summersell. That's what I'm talking about.
Hey.
Coming up at 2:30 p.m., Jeremy Law will join us for the remainder of the show. It's Brady and I here for the first 30 minutes. Lance has the day off today. I believe he's vehicle shopping, so best of luck to Lancelot, and we will have him back with us tomorrow. I want to start off the show today with some basketball news. Of course, Bruce Pearl is doing his weekly press conference Tuesday afternoon. They've got their exhibition game coming up this Friday against Southern Indiana. But Bruce Pearl did say in his media availability today, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this, a former point guard yourself in high school, he did say Waddell Green will start at point guard over Zepp Jasper.
And I think that was always bound to happen. I thought Zepp was more of a kind of come off the guy, leader, off the bench maybe kind of guy, come with that defense.
Spark plug.
Yeah, that Davion Mitchell had while he was here, while Javon McCormick did while Jared Harper was still here, like those kind of guys.
Waddell Green, definitely your Jared Harper, your undersized point guard. He's been compared a lot to Jared Harper. I thought when he first committed to Auburn, looking at Auburn's roster, I thought Waddell Green was going to end up being the starter, so this doesn't come as a shock to me. But Zepp Jasper, since he has stepped on campus, has really came on. It seems like in the perception from the media and the folks covering the team, Zepp Jasper seems to be a favorite.
Yeah, that his defense seems to be insanely good from what we hear.
But when has that been something? And I'm not disagreeing with you here. You're right. The defense is amazing there for Zepp Jasper, or at least we hope it's going to be great for Zepp Jasper. When has Bruce Pearl ever led with defense in his point guard decisions? He hasn't, right? Waddell Green, though, fits that mold of point guard that Bruce Pearl has typically leaned on. An offensive point guard, can shoot it from pretty much anywhere on the floor.
Undersized.
A good distributor, undersized, quick first step, a guy that can get to the rack because he's quick and explosive, and that's what you're getting out of Waddell Green. That's why I thought from the get-go it was going to be Waddell Green instead of Zepp Jasper. Not that Zepp Jasper can't do those things, but there's a little bit more versatility there with Zepp Jasper to be able to play the one or the two. So as you were saying, being a spark plug type of player, to be able to come off the bench, insert him into the lineup, I wouldn't be shocked if we see Waddell Green and Zepp Jasper on the floor at the same time. I know that's something they were experimenting with during the offseason, during some of those summer practices, during some of those summer scrimmages that they were having. I know that's something that you saw at times. I wouldn't be shocked if they wanted Waddell Green, Zepp Jasper, and KD Johnson all on the floor at the same time. I think there's a lot of versatility with this entire lineup with all the different players that you got.
Yeah. You've seen in the past with Bruce Pearl, he loves to run that two-point guard set. With Jared and Javon particularly.
I hate it. I don't know how you feel about it. I think the efficiency drops off a little bit.
UConn won a national title with it. Granted, it wasn't the best game ever, but UConn did have very good success with it in the past. We haven't really seen a whole lot of it in the years after that, but Bruce still likes that kind of, you know, we'll put two small guys out there and see how you deal with it.
And he's got a lot of ball handlers on this team. Waddell Green, Zepp Jasper, KD Johnson can handle the basketball as well. He's got several guys that can handle this basketball. Would be awesome if Desi Sills was here. We know that's not how things worked out for him, of course. But once again, wanted to start the show off today with Bruce Pearl's media availability. He said that Waddell Green will start at point guard for the team. Still was highly complimentary of Zepp Jasper. said that Zepp will back him up, but I would be, you know, Zepp Jasper's still going to play more than 20 minutes a game, I think.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, that's a look into some of the things going on with Auburn basketball right now as they're getting ready for their exhibition
game.
One
more thing before that.
Go for
Bruce
it.
Bruce did say 4 of the 5 starting spots have been decided already. So that means they know who 4 of the 5 guys are already, and we've learned one.
That's right. And I imagine it's going to be Jabari Smith, KD Johnson, Walker Kessler. Those are your other 3, and then it's who's replacing Alan Flanagan. Mm-hmm. And do you have thoughts on that? I would imagine Devin Cambridge, with how much we've seen. Bruce Pearl loves to play Devin Cambridge. He's one of the first guys off the bench. He fits into that small forward role from a size and gameplay perspective. He fits the mold of what you would like. Has he underperformed across his career? Yes. I think there are potentially better options that you could go with there. But the fact that he said that Zepp Jasper is going to back him up, I mean, I don't know who else you play there. I mean, Chris Moore could play there. I know he's came on a lot during the summer. 3-mo. It went from C-mo to 3-mo. I think he could play that. I think he's probably the most likely candidate to push him. I just don't expect Bruce Pearl to go big and slot in Jabari Smith at the 3 and Jalen Williams at the 4. I don't expect that. That doesn't seem like something Bruce would do.
Yeah, I don't. I agree with that. Yeah.
And Devin Cambridge is somebody that he's leaned on heavily across his time at Auburn. He loves to play him. He loves his veterans. He loves his guys that he's been with, and Devin Cambridge definitely fits that. So I would expect Devin Cambridge to start at the 3. I would imagine your starting lineup is going to be Wendell Green, KD Johnson, Devin Cambridge, Jabari Smith, and then Walker Kessler, which is still a very good starting 5. You'd love to see Alan Flanagan there at the 3. Still a very good starting 5, and I wouldn't be shocked if, as the season goes, Bruce Pearl changes his lineups. He's not glued to it. He is definitely – he's not your Dan Mullen of football where he's going to ride with a dude who's underperforming at quarterback for 5, 6, 7 weeks, right? He's not afraid to make a change, and he'll shift his lineups based on who he's playing. So even if things aren't working out early on, I think he'll give him a bit of a run with Devin Cambridge at the 3. And who knows, maybe this is the year where things click for Devin Cambridge at the small forward position. You definitely need him to step up with Alan Flanagan going out. But that's how I wanted to start the show, was talking a little basketball there as we got some news coming there. I saw it on Twitter from Jordan Hill of the Opelika Auburn News, so you can go and find that on Twitter. Go and give him a follow. He's a good Twitter follow, at Jordan Davis Hill on Twitter. Once again, Wendell Green Jr. slotted in to be the starting point guard for the Auburn Tigers here just to begin the season in the 2021-2022 year. Let's move on to football discussion. If you want to call in, 334-321-1390 is the number to call. Text line at 334-564-1840. Debunking misconceptions about Auburn football. Two rows behind me at the Auburn Ole Miss game, a guy said multiple times that Bo Nix throws the football too hard. In the midst of what was an excellent performance by Bo Nix, 22 for 30, 270-plus yards, a touchdown, 2 rushing TDs. Bo Nix, in my analogy, which I can't claim to have came up with this, I heard Colin Cowherd say it first, but the truck driver versus the trailer. Bo Nix is becoming the truck driver and moving away from what he's been for 2.5 years of his career until really about midseason this year, the trailer. And what I mean by that is, quarterbacks either are pulling along their team and making their teammates around them better. They're able to succeed despite the fact that maybe they don't have a great offensive line. Maybe their receivers aren't great. Are they making their teammates around them better? Tom Brady is a truck in the NFL. It didn't matter if he had a bad offensive line. It didn't matter if he had receivers from Southwest Louisiana State Community College playing wide receiver next to him, right? Like, he was able to make those guys better. And he was able to win NFL championships with, it didn't matter whether you knew the guy or not, playing offensive line or receiver in front of him. He was the one elevating his teammates' play. Bo Nix, I believe, is fitting into that category now. And I want to start the show off with debunking misconceptions about Auburn football this season, because I still think there's a lot of them out there.
Yeah. The one you said, he throws the ball too hard. Okay, I can see it a little bit. He needs a little bit more touch. But that's very, very, very nitpicky to just say he throws the ball too hard.
Also, catch the ball, though. If it hits in your hands, catch the ball. You're a college football wide receiver.
You're a D1 SEC receiver. You should be able to catch the ball.
Exactly. And I think that that's been something that's just outrageous. But I've got 3 different misconceptions that I feel like I hear. And one of them is not Bo Nix throws the ball too hard. One of them is Bo Nix isn't good, and I still think that there is a pervasive belief out there that apparently Bo Nix really hasn't taken a step forward. I disagree with that vehemently. He's playing his most consistent football of his career, and I'll get to that in a few, but we have three misconceptions that I hear often and have been hearing over the last couple of weeks that I just think plain and simple are not true about this football team. I heard this all throughout my section during the ball game. Auburn's defense isn't good. Now, you, I think, fall a little bit more into this category than I think you have some issues with the defense, whereas I like this defense. I don't think it's as good as maybe some of those Kevin Steele defenses that we had, but I did address this a little bit yesterday. It's kind of ridiculous, I think, to compare this team with this personnel and with this roster to defenses that Auburn had in the past that featured Derrick Brown and Marlon Davidson on the front seven. Auburn just doesn't have those types of players on this roster. What they're doing right now is still top end in the SEC statistically.
Yeah, Auburn's not going to be the dominant defense it was under when we had people like Derrick Brown, Carlton Davis, Marlon Davidson, Deshaun Davis. Those guys are gone. Right now you have what you have. You don't have the best defensive line. You don't have I wouldn't say you have the best defensive secondary, but you still have a solid group of linebackers that can come up and stop the run. And that's what we've been good at so far this year. The defensive secondary has been kind of spotty in some spots, but in the second half of games, you see a different defense come out every halftime. Every halftime is a different defense from the first half, and it gets progressively better. Like, the fourth quarter defense we've had, but for both Ole Miss and Arkansas, where we've just kind of held them, it's been amazing.
Like, 3 second-half points to one of the best offenses in all of college football.
It's absolutely insane. And you don't think it, you look up at the scoreboard and you're like, oh, they have 300 yards passing. Okay, but they only have 20 points. Like, it's what happened with Joe Burrow in 2019 against Auburn. They had all those yards. They only could score 23 points on us, and we had a chance to win that game. So,
and I think they're doing what they need to be doing for an offense that's now finding a way to score points. But I think there's this narrative about Auburn's defense that it's not good because it's giving up yards, and I don't think that matters. I think at the end of the day, what matters is, are you keeping them off the scoreboard? And right now, Auburn is keeping SEC opponents off the scoreboard at a rate better than 3/4 of this conference. Auburn right now is 4th in the SEC in points allowed per game in conference play, just behind Georgia, who's given up 7.2 in conference play, Kentucky at 22.2, and Texas A&M at 22.4. Auburn is allowing 24 points per game in conference play on a slate of conference games that I would argue is as tough as anyone else's in this conference that they faced up to this point. They've played LSU, who was fully healthy at the time that they played them on offense. Kayshon Boutte was still playing. Max Johnson still had all of his weapons around him on that offense. You've played Georgia, who is still as good as anybody in the country from a talent perspective. Now, I still have questions about the offense if they were to fall behind, but at this point that has not been the case. And they're scoring 30 or more points per game on everybody that they play. That is still a good offense. They held Arkansas at their place to 23 points, and everybody just loved Arkansas. Everybody just loved that team. And then you held Ole Miss, which once again has been regarded as one of college football's best offense for the past two seasons, and you held them to 20 points, less than what Alabama held them to, less than what many of the teams that have played Ole Miss this year have held them to. That was one of their lowest points totals in years in Oxford. It befuddles me that. And it's not just inside the Auburn fan base. It's other people that I've talked to that hold this belief that are not, you know, covering Auburn. It's looking at the national media and how they talk about Auburn. It's just there is this belief out there. There's this narrative out there that it's just not that good. But that's not true. They're not giving up points.
Yeah, the 24 points a game is,
it's better than Alabama.
It's better than most of the good teams.
It's better than Mississippi State. It's better. I mean, once again, it's only behind Georgia, Kentucky, and Texas A&M. And it's very close to Kentucky and Texas A&M. And A&M has had the benefit of playing Missouri and South Carolina. Auburn hasn't gotten to play South Carolina yet to boost that number for them, right? They didn't get to play Missouri. They had to play Georgia. If A&M played Georgia, how many points would they give up, right? You give up 26 to a Mississippi State team that hadn't quite figured out their offense yet. A&M has played a much easier slate of games versus than Auburn has. Of course you're going to play a good team at some point. I know they've played Alabama, but outside of Alabama, they have not played a difficult SEC schedule.
Not yet, no.
They haven't.
And they really don't have an extremely tough schedule this year. They have their SEC West guys, but a lot of those SEC West teams are going to be either A, injured at this point, or B, just not as good as we thought they were at the beginning of the season.
Their East opponents are Missouri and South Carolina,
which are the easiest, two of the easiest teams in the East.
And one of those teams was only 1 point better than Vanderbilt, so you really could slot Vanderbilt in. And the other team still let Vandy score 28. It still was a relatively entertaining ball game early this past weekend. So, I mean, you could swap Vanderbilt for any of those teams. Those are three of the worst teams that we have seen in the SEC in years.
Agreed.
And so I think A&M's defense has propped up a little bit statistically. Kentucky has gotten gouged the last couple of weeks. I don't think that they've played an extremely difficult schedule from an offensive standpoint. And now that they're beginning to play better offensive teams, they're starting to get gouged a little bit. I just think it's ridiculous to say that Auburn, because they're giving up some yards. That's today's day and age in college football. Offensive schemes, talent, the game, penalties, all that benefits the offense. And Auburn's defense, it's going to give up yards. Just don't give up points. They're 26th in the country in sacks. That's actually a better total than I thought it was going to be. I didn't expect them to be ranked that high in sacks. They're 26th in the nation in sacks per game. So they're getting home. Colby Wooden, consistently, I see graphics on social media on a day in and day out basis that Colby Wooden's ranking up there with those Georgia guys on the front seven in terms of his pressure rate, in terms of run stopping, in terms of Pro Football Focus grades. They're getting home. They're fourth in the nation in tackles for loss, which is first in the SEC. They're great at run stopping,
which is better than Georgia. Should we?
Exactly, they're better than Georgia at doing that, right? And I don't even think it's particularly close. I mean, it is from an actual per-game standpoint, but if you're looking at it from a ranking standpoint, Auburn's like a whole 10 spots ahead of them in those rankings. And then they're only giving up 3.26 yards per rush. So I think people have been a little too hard on this Auburn defense this year. And I hear it every week. People are pulling their hair out. They've given up another first down. Now, there are some negatives there. Their third down defense is average in college football. It's hanging around in the 60s and the 70s. They're still not doing a great job of getting off the field. Opponents are converting at about 38% clip against Auburn. I'm not going to say that it's not without problems, but you're comparing this defense to stuff that we were spoiled by over the last couple of weeks, or not weeks, last couple of seasons, when you had, you know, it started out where you had Carl Lawson on the defensive line and Montrevious Adams together. We thought, man, this is the best thing since sliced bread, you know? Because the last time that we had seen linemen like that was back when Tuberville was here, right? Or when Nick Fairley was here. And Nick Fairley was even kind of a unicorn to us back in 2010. Mm-hmm. You just didn't have – there was a stretch of time where those guys – like the Auburn defensive line was not playing well, 2011, 2012. And then 13 rolls along and Carl Lawson's a freshman and you had some of those guys. D Ford was great. But we got spoiled by D Ford, Carl Lawson, Montrevious Adams, Derek Brown, and Marlon Davidson.
Oh,
just think about that stretch of defensive linemen. And that's going to make everything look a lot better across the linebackers, across the defensive backfield. I just think people have been comparing this Auburn defense this year, have been holding it to an unfair standard.
Yeah, it's very hard to get over those teams because how dominant they were just on defense.
It was nasty. We got used to seeing Derrick Brown throw offensive linemen, 3-pound human beings into quarterbacks.
Yes, it was amazing, but
we didn't appreciate it.
We definitely did not appreciate it enough. Because this team right now, the defensive line, it worries me in some aspects, but for the most part, I think they're doing their job and winning this team games right now.
100%. I agree with that. Let's head to a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue to debunk some other narratives about this Auburn football team that I believe to be just plain out wrong, plain out incorrect, and just unfair. We'll be back with more of On the Line on the other side of this break. Back on the Line, Noah Gardner and Brady Summersell with you on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. Number to call, 334-321-1390. Text line at 334-564-1840. debunking misconceptions about Auburn football. There are narratives out there that are just not fair, not right, incorrect. And that's what we're going through right here, is debunking misconceptions, debunking narratives about Auburn football. If you've got one out there that you feel like you've got a problem with, if you've got a bone to pick with the national media out there, if there's something you've been hearing that you don't like, call in 334-321-1390. We're taking your calls all show long here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. We broke down the Auburn defense in specific on the previous segment. Now we're going to get into talking about some stuff about the offense that I dislike. And one of those things is Brady, Bo Nix apparently throws the football too hard.
Way too hard. He needs to throw it softer. He needs to have a lot more he does need to have some bit of touch, but small thing that shouldn't really matter that much.
It's ridiculous that you even would agree with that. How would you even agree with that?
I do believe he needs to work on his touch a little bit.
Have you ever heard that as a criticism of another quarterback? Not touch. I think touch and him throwing the ball too hard are completely different things.
Okay,
because when a receiver drops a pass and someone says, oh, he threw the football too hard, and you're all of a sudden blaming the quarterback because the receiver dropped the ball, well, that is on a whole nother level.
That's a whole different level. Yeah, I would agree with that then, yes. Yeah, that's crazy.
I'll get there with you on that. He needs a little bit more touch. But I think touch is a little bit different than throwing the football too hard. And my reasoning for that is touch is the ability to drop a pass up and over a linebacker in zone coverage. They're sitting in cover three in the middle of the field. You got a dude on a crossing pattern coming across the top. You're trying to drop the football in between the safety and zone coverage over the top. And you're trying to drop. Yeah, you're trying to get that football in between the linebacker and the safety who are back in zone coverage. That's touch. That's touch to me. When you've got a wide open receiver and you throw it and it hits them in the hands and they drop it, that's stone hands.
Yeah,
that's the receiver.
Yeah.
Baker Mayfield, a guy that I really like to watch. When he first went to the NFL, receivers said it was like catching bullets. Do you think that they told him to throw the ball any lighter?
Not a chance.
I'd be shocked if they did. I'd love to know, but these quarterbacks, you want arm strength. You want a quarterback to be able to send your hands. And my reasoning for that is those are the types of quarterbacks that can make the tight window throws that win you football games. Are you able to make that back shoulder throw on the sideline late in the game that can move the chains where only your receiver can put his hands on it and the defensive back can't get there? Those tight window throws require arm strength. Those tight window throws don't necessarily require touch. They require arm strength and placement. And Bo Nix has got it, and I think he's showing it. Now, I do agree he could use a little bit more touch on passes where you're trying to drop it, once again, in between zone coverage. That is something. And I thought we saw him attempt to do that a little bit in the Ole Miss game.
Yeah, I would agree with that one. The pass to Demetrius and to the first, I think it was the first drive in the second half, the Luke
he was coming across on – there was a crossing pattern, and I think it was a tight end.
Yes.
And it was a deep post, kind of a lazy post coming across the field, and he tried to drop it up and over a man that was tracking back in coverage. And he missed him. He did miss him. Mm-hmm. Bo's not 100% there yet, but that's an NFL-caliber throw.
Yes.
Let's head to the phone lines now. 334-321-1390 is the number to call. We got Spectre online with us. Spectre, how's it going today, my man?
Okay, pretty good. You're absolutely right, Noah, about the speed of that ball. Tom Brady, he's a prime example. He can throw a bullet, and he knows when to throw it as a bullet because he's got to get in between two defenders and hit that receiver right in the hands. He's the best at it. As far as Bo Nix, he throws the ball just like he has to throw the ball. I don't think Bo Nix is the problem. I always thought the receivers were the problem. Go ahead.
And now you see the receivers are catching the football, and all of a sudden everything's good in the world. So I agree with
you. Yeah, exactly right. It's the receivers had the issue in the beginning because we had one receiver. I forget his name. Tiny, and what's his name?
Well, there's John Samuel Shanker. Is there
Shanker would catch every ball that was thrown to him if it was thrown accurately, and if he can catch it, all these other receivers should be able to catch it.
100%. For a while, the tight ends were the best receivers on the team, and I'm glad that that's not the truth anymore.
Yeah, that's because they got big paws, too, now.
yeah.
You know, you got these little receivers that are, you know, 6 foot tall, weigh 110 pounds. They got, some of them got little hands, but, you know, that doesn't matter anymore. I mean, you got the same thing in the NFL, these same receivers, and they can catch a bullet with one hand. I've seen them do it with one hand.
Odell Beckham, I mean, there was a catch this past weekend that in the Jets-Bengals game that was absolutely stupid. You're right, one-handed bullets. I agree with you.
Yeah, anyway, that's about all I got today, guys.
Appreciate it, Spectre. Hope you have a good afternoon, my man. That was Spectre on the line with us. If you want to call in, 334-321-1390 is the number to call here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. We are debunking narratives out there, wrong narratives, about Auburn football. I want to keep talking about Bo Nix's development because there are still people out there, social media, and I think this one's one that's beginning to quiet more on a week-to-week basis as he continues to string together these performances. But there are some folks out there that still don't think that he's came a long way. Bo Nix has come. He is so far removed from where he was, even like 4 weeks ago. It's not even close. He is in a different universe in terms of quarterback play right now. There is stuff he did this past weekend that I have been waiting to see out of an Auburn quarterback my lifetime, my entire lifetime. He came to the line of scrimmage on the first drive and called an audible. He checked out of a play based on something he saw pre-snap, and it ended up resulting in a big play first down to one of his tight ends. I saw an Auburn quarterback look off a safety on a play that I feel comfortable in saying was designed for Demetrius Robertson on that wheel route. He looks at the middle of the field, looks off both of the safeties to keep them in the middle of the field, and then turns and has a wide open Demetrius Robertson and throws it on a dime. Doesn't overthrow him, puts it on the money. Big play for Auburn, moves the chains. And he's doing this with consistency. And that's just a little bit of what he did this past weekend against Ole Miss. He's consistently making the right decisions, knowing where to go with the football. That's a guy who understands the offense. That's a guy who understands what the opposing teams are doing from a defensive standpoint. He's coming to the line of scrimmage. He's confident. He's making quick and right decisions on a regular basis. Consistency out of the quarterback position. This is something new for Auburn fans. Maybe it's time to start believing in it. Back on the Line, Noah Gardner, Brady Summers, though, with you on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Number to call, 334-321-1390. Text line, 334-564-1840. Debunking wrong narratives about Auburn football. A lot of those out there. I'm as defensive as Dan Mullen right now. I am not pleased with some of the things that I'm hearing about this Auburn football team nationally, from Alabama fans as well. Just nobody wants to give credit to this Auburn football team. I'll say this. Auburn may not win the Iron Bowl this year. Auburn may not go to the SEC Championship. Still doesn't mean that it wasn't a good year. It was a good year. Auburn's putting together a great year. 9-3 potentially. And Brian Hartson's first season is what Auburn could be on track for. Of course, you got to be at A&M. I've said this many times. It's a stepping stone year for Auburn. One game unlocks the door to the next game. It takes you to the next level. You win that game, it continues to elevate this season for you. That's the type of year it's been for Auburn. And right now, they're passing all the tests. Sure, they lost to Penn State. Sure, they lost to the number one team in the country in Georgia. But since that Georgia game, really since that LSU game, I think they've been up to the test. And they've passed all of them with the exception of that Georgia game. And nobody's going to fault you for that.
This will be the fourth week in a row that Auburn has played a ranked team. Or, excuse me, we had a bye week in between after the Georgia game, or after the Arkansas game.
Still, fourth game in a row.
Fourth game in a row with playing a ranked team.
And they have a chance to go 3-1 across that stretch.
Which is very impressive.
So my take on this is, it's time to start giving Auburn respect. And I'm really curious to see where they're going to be in the college football playoff rankings that are released tonight. Later on in the show, I'll give you my top four, which is going to be different, I believe, than what the committee is going to put out, much to my chagrin, because I don't want to see Cincinnati anywhere near that top four. but it's probably going to happen. But I'll give you my top four later on. Still debunking narratives, wrong narratives about Auburn football. That's the key word there. Put an asterisk around it. Wrong narratives about Auburn football. The Auburn offensive line is a liability. That's something I feel like I hear when folks pick against Auburn or folks have a concern about Auburn is, can this offensive line pass protect? Can this offensive line run block? I've been saying, look, folks are stacking the box against Auburn. That's beginning to change. Look at what happened with Ole Miss this past weekend. Auburn consistently was able to get numbers advantages in the box. Go back and watch the game and look at where Auburn ran the football to, which side of the field Auburn ran the football to. It's mainly a zone scheme. So look at which side Auburn is running the football to. Divide the field in half, and they count how many blockers Auburn has on that line of the scrimmage in the tackle box with the center there included. And then count up how many defensive players are on that side of the field in the tackle box. And if you do that, you will see most of the time on Saturday against Ole Miss, Auburn was able to get numbers advantages. What does that tell you? Ole Miss was no longer stacking the box. Auburn was not playing an opponent that was stacking the box against them. Guess what happened? Auburn ran for over 200 yards on the ground, was able to get over 4.5 yards per carry. The running game got going. Teams now are having to respect Auburn's passing game. Now, Ole Miss's defense isn't great. I want to see that against A&M this week to further confirm that, but I don't believe Auburn's offensive line is a liability. I actually rather believe that it is a strength on this football team, and here are some statistics why. 13th in sacks allowed this season nationally, not the SEC. That might have been 13th in the SEC last year. They're 13th nationally this year. Third in the SEC. They're not that far behind Georgia. 9th in tackles for loss allowed per game. First in the SEC in that category, tied with Georgia. 9th in tackles for loss allowed in the country. First in the SEC. 6th in the country, not the SEC, in the nation. 6th in the nation. This is Service Academy level. 6th in the nation in yards per rush. That's first in the SEC. Nobody else in the SEC has a higher yards per carry total than Auburn. First in the SEC. All those stats off of NCAA.com. Auburn's offensive line isn't a liability. Auburn's offensive line is a strength. Now, they've got excellent running backs. But even Jarquez Hunter this past week averaged just 3.2 yards per carry. Tank averaged over 6, and I think Tank did a lot of things better than Jarquez did this past weekend. But also, let's give some credit to the big guys up front. I don't think that there's any one spectacular talent on this Auburn offensive line. I just think they've been together for 3-4 seasons now. They've been in the program for a while. This is the right chemistry. I think Will Friend's teaching them the game better than the previous offensive line coaches did. And I think they're gelling really well together. Now, one injury could bring the whole thing down. But with that being said, it didn't in the Arkansas game. Killian Zaire slotted in at left tackle, and I thought he performed really well. Well enough to maybe even argue for him to start this past weekend against Ole Miss.
He did get some snaps, I believe, in the Ole Miss game. I don't know if that was an injury thing or if that was just we want competition. I have no idea, but I do believe he was in the game for a few snaps.
And you want to get some guys' experience as well. You want to get those guys out there to get them some snaps so that when they are called upon, they're ready to go. And Killian Zaire kind of came out of left field for me. I mean, you heard stuff in the offseason about some of these backup offensive linemen, but based off of previous year's performances on the offensive line, I think it was all okay to be skeptical about this offensive line, especially the depth on it. But Zaire's a look where there's some depth there that you can go to. Now, I don't know about depth at other positions, and that's why I said if there is an injury on this offensive line, it's going to hurt them. If there's an injury on this offensive line, maybe from a chemistry standpoint, I don't know how much these other guys below them on the depth chart know the playbook. I don't know how far along they are from a football IQ standpoint, which is really important on the O-line, and then how they fit in from a chemistry standpoint. But what I know is this group of offensive linemen, first of all, have all been blessed by the good Lord that none of them have really gotten hurt, and they're all fully healthy still at this point in the year. That's awesome. And they're playing really well together. They've got that chemistry, and the statistics prove it. You can't argue with me. 13th in sacks in the country, in sacks allowed. 9th in tackles for loss allowed. They're not giving up negative plays. They're staying ahead in the chains.
And you feel like whenever there's a negative play, you feel like it's almost not the O-line's fault, which is a
giant it's like the other team blitzed 11 people, maybe 12.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not fair, right? 6th in yards per rush in the country, not in the SEC, in the country. first in the SEC in that category. Nobody's running the ball as good as Auburn is on a per-carry clip. I mean, that's – and Auburn's been doing it against stacked boxes since the Georgia State game. Really, since the Penn State game. I think second half Penn State game, they started stacking the box. I mean, at that point, since that game, Auburn's been facing 7-8 guys in the box. No way to get numbers advantages. And they're still first in the SEC in that category. That's impressive. Don't bring up the Akron and Alabama State games. Everybody's played their cupcakes at this point, just about. Don't give me that. Auburn's played just as tough a schedule as anybody, and they still have one of the toughest schedules down the stretch. This offensive line isn't a liability. It's a strength, and it's time to start talking about it that way. Something else, I want to go back and talk about the punter real quick before we go to break. Auburn's punting game is out of this world. Literally, the ball is floating in space right now because Oscar Chapman sent it there. I can't stress enough how pumped everybody should be about how Auburn is punting right now. Oscar Chapman is an absolute beast. An absolute beast. 56 yards per punt this past weekend, and that's like the norm. When he kicks the football, it looks like someone threw it. It looks like Brett Favre threw it 80 yards down the field. And it's not just distance. It's hang time, too. Auburn's punt coverage is also out of this world. We got used to watching guys break off big returns, having to punt the ball out of bounds because we were afraid that somebody was going to bust a big return on Auburn. We don't have to worry about that anymore. We don't have to worry about that anymore. You've got a punter that can flip the field with one kick, even if he's inside his own 20-yard line, and put the other team into so-so field position. I mean, there was a punt this past weekend that literally looked like Brett Favre threw the football down the field. Beautiful spiral on it, and it just kept carrying, but it also had hang time, and it goes out inside the 10-yard line. Stephen Clark was kind of the litmus test for punters in the past decade. He was like the last great punter Auburn had, and he wasn't smashing the football down the field. He didn't have the leg of Hulk. He was just accurate and was able to get a lot of hang time on it. Oscar Chapman has the leg of Hulk, and he's getting hang time on it. I mean, it's truly spectacular. I'm really pumped about Auburn's special teams, and I don't think that's been talked about enough. I know that's not me debunking a narrative. I think that's me more bringing up something that I think folks should be talking about with this football team a little bit more, is the special teams from a defensive standpoint. And I don't want people to talk about this because it's ended up being a negative where I didn't think it would be a negative. I thought Auburn would be a little bit better on the offensive side of special teams. I thought they would be better at returning kicks, especially with the addition of Donovan Kaufman and what he did at Vanderbilt last season, returning a punt for a touchdown against LSU. I thought we were going to see better offensive special teams. We really haven't seen any great returns this year. Brian Harsin harped on that yesterday in his press conference. At some point, he said, we're either going to have to start fair catching it or letting it go through the end zone. You know, Demetrius Robertson fumbled the punt this past weekend. Every time he caught the punt, he was getting swarmed. That's a blocking issue. It's not his fault that they got down there on him. But I just don't think that Auburn's busted that many returns. And when they have returned it, what happened? You had two or three penalties. You had one or two penalties this past weekend on special teams. And it's happened all throughout this season. So from an offensive standpoint, that's been really disappointing to see that, because I thought that was going to be a plus for Auburn this year, but I don't think it has been. If anything, there's been more negatives than positives. And then Anders Carlson, he's 6-for-8 on kicks between 40 and 49 yards, 0-for-2 on kicks 50-plus. The 6-for-8 on 40 to 49, and he's had some long ones like 49-yarders where you're like, okay, that's a 50-yarder. You give him credit for that. But I'll say it hasn't felt like Anders Carlson has stepped up to the table with a clutch kick moment this year where you're like, any ordinary kicker in college football couldn't have done that, right? Like, he did something that exceptional kickers can do. He's not winning the Groza this year. Last year, he had a Groza-level season. This year, I don't think it's a Groza-level season. He just hasn't added anything that average kickers or above-average kickers, I'll say above-average kickers, don't do. You know, he's going to make the average kick in college football consistently. But the great kick, that has not been done with consistency this season. And you looked at a 43-yarder this past weekend that was missed. And it's getting to the point now where if it's 40-plus yards, I'm a little uncomfortable. I don't know if it's going through. So the offensive side of things and special teams have been a little disappointing for me. Defensive special teams, Oscar Chapman is the best specialist on this Auburn football team. I don't know how I that guy. If Aaron Sipos, and Aaron Sipos was a good punter, he was good. He's kicking in the NFL right now. He's punting for the Eagles. That's a thing. Aaron Sipos is in the NFL. Do you know that?
Yes.
You seen him on Sundays?
Yes, I actually have.
If Aaron Sipos is in the NFL, Oscar Chapman will be in the NFL.
For the Ole Miss game, he averaged 56 yards a punt. He had three punts. He averaged 56 yards per punt.
That's stupid.
A long of 65, which is the longest of his season so far.
I'm just not used to this. And I keep seeing these they're just hammered. And I'm like, man, this is not normal for Auburn.
The stats do say he didn't have a touchback, but I'm pretty sure he did have a touchback in that
game.
He
did. One ball rolled into the end zone. Yes. That did happen.
Yes.
Not his fault.
Not his fault at all either.
Coverage team should have gotten that.
Absolutely.
We know what we're talking about. So, yeah, that was debunking narratives about Auburn football that I believe to be incorrect, and then me throwing a bonus one in there, something that we should be talking about that we're not with Auburn football. That'll be a fun segment to do later on this week. Something that we should be talking about with Auburn that we're not. Coming up on the other side of this break, we're going to take a look at what we believe the top four teams should be in tonight's release of the college football playoff rankings. What would my top four be? This is not me predicting what the top four actually will be, because I'm probably going to be angry at the top four tonight. But I will tell you what my top four is on the other side of this break. You're listening to On the Line. Back on the Line, Noah Gardner, Brady Summersell with you on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. Number to call, 334-321-1390. Text line at 334-564-1840. Just got finished debunking wrong narratives about Auburn football on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. We're now going to move into talking about the college football playoff rankings that are going to be released tonight. I believe it's at 7 p.m. We've got Tuesday night action back in college football. That's got to be exciting. Brady, are you not pumped? Maction? Eastern Michigan, Toledo? Glass Bowl action?
I did not know it was called the Glass Bowl, but...
That's the name of Toledo's football stadium, is the Glass Bowl.
Okay. Well, obviously, you can tell how excited I am. Don't even know the stadium.
I know way too much about the Maction. Tuesday night Maction tonight.
I can admit to not being knowledgeable about that section of football.
Miami, Ohio, and Ohio play tonight on ESPNU. That one's at 6:30. And then on ESPN2, it is Toledo and Eastern Michigan at 6:30. So if you're making a poor choice tonight and you are not watching the Atlanta Braves and you instead decide to watch Eastern Michigan and Toledo, that's how you can watch it. And then there's some NBA games as well. But everybody knows what to watch tonight is the Atlanta Braves Game 6 of the World Series. That could also bring with it crippling depression, but that is on TV tonight.
Yeah, for Braves fan, as a Cubs fan, I know what you're going
through
right now.
Well, you live with it 162 games a year.
Yeah, exactly.
Except for the one year where y'all won the World Series.
Which was amazing. So I understand how a lot of y'all are feeling right now, the Braves fans are feeling. You had that 3-1 lead. That's what the Indians had on us. And you're hoping what happened in 2015, 2016 does not happen again.
You can break away tonight, though, and go and check out the college football playoff rankings. I'm going to give you my top four teams for tonight's release of the college football playoff rankings. This is not what I predict it to actually be. This is what I would rank them as. If I was in that room, if I was blessed to be on that committee, this is what my top four would be, and I would probably make a lot of people angry. I would be, and I have been called this before, an elitist. Levi Fitzwater, months ago, when we were doing the show together, Levi called me a college football elitist because I don't play with that group of five stuff. Now, I also love to watch Maction on a Tuesday night, but I also know if there's a 12-0 MAC team, they do not belong in my college football playoff. And how far is Cincinnati really right now from being an undefeated MAC team? Let's be honest. Let's be honest with that resume. They've played the worst that the American Athletic Conference has to offer. One of their toughest teams on that schedule, or what we thought would be one of their toughest teams, UCF. They're playing without their quarterback. Half their team's hurt. UCF lost to Navy. Navy's one in the win column was to UCF. And they're hurt. Bad. All over the place. Injuries all over the place. Gus Malzahn having a tough first year
in Orlando. But, hey, he gets to go to the Big 12. He'll be back in Power 5 football. That'll be good for him. But I just don't believe Cincinnati deserves, at this point, to be in that top four. If you put him at 5, fine. If you put him at 6, 7, I think there are a number of teams in the top 25 that I would take in a game right now. If they were to play, I would take them to beat Cincinnati. There's a number of teams in the top 25 that I would like more than Cincinnati at this point. But I'm going to break down my top four right here. We only got a couple of minutes here left in this segment. I'll continue to break it down in hour number two. We got 3 minutes left here, so I'm going to get to it. Of course, everybody knows who number one should be. Wake Forest. I'm joking. Georgia. It should be Georgia. Well, Brady, you had something to say. You want Wake Forest at the top?
I'd just love to see Wake Forest actually like finish the season undefeated and just to cause chaos. Like,
well, it's going to ruin a lot of things if that happens. I don't think they're going to. They still have to play NC State, Clemson, Boston College. Then they got to play Florida State as well. They've got to play all the decent teams, the top half teams of the Atlantic, that are right there with them. They do. They have a tough schedule. I need them to lose. There's a lot of teams that I need to lose right now, especially if Auburn keeps winning, because you're going to get a logjam at the end.
Yep.
And you're going to have to make some tough decisions, and someone's going to get left out. And Wake Forest certainly should be the team that gets left out if they were to go undefeated and some other teams that are still ranked in front of them. There's a reason why those teams are ranked in front of them right now. But number one is Georgia. Georgia's put together the best resume in college football. They have 4 ranked wins. They were ranked at the time. They may not still be ranked, but they have 4 wins against ranked teams at the time. Nobody else has around that many. They've dominated every team put in front of them since the Clemson game. Scoring with consistency. Over 30 points a game. They're beating teams probably with consistency around 30 points a game. Of course, some of the better teams that they've played on their schedule, Kentucky, Auburn, hung with them for a little bit. But this team, from a talent perspective, is putting everyone that they play in a stranglehold and they're all tapping out. Georgia, undeniably, we all know this, they're going to be number one tonight and they would be number one in my rankings. Number two, though, and I don't know if this is going to happen, they're currently behind Cincinnati in the AP poll, but I would put them at number two, and this is probably going to make some Auburn people mad, but I would put Alabama at number two in the college football playoff rankings tonight. At the end of the day, what is the motto? What is the slogan of the college football playoff since its inception? What is it, Brady? You don't know? They've said it enough. Who are the 4 best teams? We are ranking this based off of who are the 4 best teams. I'm going to ask you this question. If Alabama played Cincinnati tomorrow, who wins?
Bama.
How much?
I'd probably say about 20.
Exactly. Alabama's a better football team. We all know it. Alabama's better than Cincinnati. If Alabama played Michigan State tomorrow, who wins?
That one I'd have a little bit of a...
You're a little bit more reserved, but you still think Alabama's going to win. You think Alabama's the better football team, don't you?
I'd say Alabama's a better football team. Michigan State could upset Bama in that one.
There's at least like a 5% chance,
Higher chance than Cincinnati.
Alabama, Oklahoma, who's a better football team?
Bama. I'd say Bama.
Exactly. And that's kind of the point that I'm trying to make. And I'll continue to make that argument on the other side of this break. Start of hour number two, we'll break down top 4 teams in tonight's release of the college football playoff rankings. You're listening On the Line.
On the Line, live on Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga, and in Auburn on ESPN 106.7 or online on FoxSports983.com and ESPNAU.com. You are On the Line with Noah Gardner and Lance Daw. Join the show by calling in at 334-321-1390. Or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Hour number two of On the Line. Noah Gardner here with you on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. Brady Summersell behind the controls producing the show today. Give him a call. 334-321-1390. He likes to hear your voice, the melodious voice of our callers. We want to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Whatever thoughts you've got, we opened up the show today debunking wrong narratives about Auburn football. If you've got any that you've heard that bother you,
If someone behind you said something stupid at an Auburn football game, I want to know. I want to know. And let's talk about it. We can complain together. Misery loves company. Auburn football, 6-2 on the year. Nobody should be miserable. Everybody should be happy. Two thumbs up. Things are going great in year number one for Brian Harsin. We want to hear from you. We'll talk about anything you want to talk about in the sports world. 334-321-1390. If you want to talk about curling, I'll give you my best shot. 334-321-1390. We're going to start off hour number two here as we do every day, making headlines. Going to take a look at some of the big headlines going around the sports world and stuff that should be pertinent to folks here around the neighborhood. Game 6 of the World Series is tonight at 7:09 p.m. on Fox. Game 6, Atlanta leads 3-2. Final two games in Houston. If the Braves are going to win the World Series, it's going to be away from the home faithful. It's going to be away from the Battery. It's going to be in a hostile territory. And it's going to be something unfamiliar for a lot of folks. Something that a lot of people have not seen in their lifetime and have been hoping and pining to see for a while. And every day, when the Braves got up 3-1, you couldn't go anywhere. You couldn't come out of your house without someone saying, oh, but it's the Braves with a 3-1 lead. Oh, but it's Atlanta sports. Oh, but it's a Georgia sports team. Brady said that to me today. It's a Georgia sports team. It's the wrong Georgia sports team. A lot of people around here would want to see the Bulldogs do that. Not the Braves, but nonetheless, Braves are up 3-2 on the Houston Astros tonight. We got the lineups here. Of course, the probable pitching matchup tonight, Max Fried against Luis Garcia. Luis Garcia had a good outing, 2.45 here in the World Series. Max Fried, 10.8 ERA in the World Series, went 5 innings. Of course, he pitched in the game that the Braves lost. The Astros lost with Luis Garcia on the mound, but once again, he still had a pretty good outing for the Astros. 2.45 ERA across 3.2 innings pitched. The Braves lineup tonight, Eddie Rosario's going to lead it off. Jorge Soler DHing in the two spot. Freddie Freeman batting third. Austin Riley fourth. Adam Duvall fifth. Jock Peterson sixth. Ozzie Albee seventh. Darno eighth. And Dansby Swanson ninth. I like this lineup. I like to see Freddie Freeman in the three spot. Not that I dislike the two spot a whole lot more, but something about Freddie Freeman batting in the three spot feels right. And there's a lot of power right there between Freeman, Riley, and Duvall back to back to back. And the Braves have been able to generate some runs out of the middle of the order. You look at 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 for the Braves. 27 home runs, 31 home runs, 33, 38, 18, and 30. And then Swanson with 27 in the ninth spot. There's a lot of power in this lineup going against the Houston Astros. The Houston lineup, Jose Altuve leading off as he always does. Michael Brantley second. Carlos Correa third. Yordan Alvarez fourth. Gurriel at 5. Tucker at 6. Bregman 7. Siri 8. And Maldonado 9. That's the Astros order here. Not as much power, but a heck of a lot of averages. Eighth man in the order, bats 304. You got a lot of guys batting a high percentage here in the postseason and across the season. So Braves are going to have their hands. They're going to have their hands full tonight, as we knew they would in every game. But I'm confident going into tonight's matchup. I felt like Braves in 6 seemed realistic, but I'll say this, though. I think we all start to sweat a little bit more if they lose tonight.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
And I said this during the NLCS. I said the Braves got to win in 6. You can't be going back through what you've gone through so many years and blowing leads. You can't go back through what you did last year with the Dodgers. They didn't. They closed it off in 6. They barred the door and they won. Because they've already done that and they did it against a better team in the NLCS, you feel more confident that they can do this here. It doesn't seem as much of a long shot. But if they were to lose tonight, I think the Astros should be favored in Game 7. I think the Braves have to win it tonight. And if they don't, I would not feel good about Game 7. I won't feel good. Other people may still be holding on to hope. And not that Game 7 won't be good. It's just the Astros at the plate in a one-game scenario like that, which I know it's been across the course of 7 games in a series, but in one game, those bats, you have to trust that more. And the Braves right now, they're stringing together solo home run, solo home run, solo home run, you know, and they've won some close games here by low scoring margins, beat the Astros 3-2 the other night on Saturday night, and won another game earlier in the series because they were able to basically no-hit the Astros through 7 or 8 innings, however long it was. They've relied on winning with a lot of their arms here up to this point. And luckily, you've got those arms, and you've got the guy that you would want on the bump tonight. It may not be Charlie Morton. That's who you would love to see here. But Charlie Morton, he's not available. This is your next best option with Max Fried. If you can get a great start out of him, you can get some runs early. You've got the bullpen. That's what it comes down to. Can you get the run support early on? Can you build a 2-3 run lead? And then you can trust this bullpen all the way through. Of course, you would love more than 2 or 3 runs against this Astros bunch because we saw what they did the other night. They came back from 4 down. No lead seems to be safe against the Astros. But this bullpen, Tyler Matzek, A.J. Minter, Luke Jackson, those are your guys. Those are your guys. Jesse Chavez, those are your guys. You can ride with them. They've got the bullpen to do it. You just got to build the run support, and that's what it comes down to. And I think this is the guy you would want on the mound based off of his postseason body of work. Granted, he had a good start against the Braves earlier in the series, but this would be the guy that you would want on the mound. The Braves could do it. Just got to get it started. Second headline here, Alabama basketball lands 2 commitments in 1 day yesterday with 5-star small forward Brandon Miller and 4-star power forward Noah Clowney. These guys are major commitments, and this is just another example, and I saw a tweet about this yesterday. I think it was from Aaron Torres of Fox Sports. He covers college basketball. He was talking about how people thought that Nate Oates' style of play would help him a lot on the recruiting trail. And I don't disagree with that. And it's helped out Bruce Pearl. But it's kind of like Auburn. I said this to an Alabama fan yesterday. I said, what Alabama's doing, and I didn't mean this in a derogatory way. It's just the truth. Alabama's renaissance in basketball is due to what Auburn did a few years prior. Alabama is responding right now in a huge way to what Auburn did, not only on the recruiting trail, but also in terms of results with back-to-back-to-back 25-win seasons and putting up one of the best records in college basketball over a 3-year stint before this past season where it was definitely underwhelming. And you knew why it was going to be. They were a lot younger. They lost a lot of talent from the year before. Injuries. Postseason was ripped out from underneath them before the season started. But Alabama is responding in a big way right now on the recruiting trail. And I'm going to bring up some of these recruiting numbers for you. But this is a top 11 recruit in Brandon Miller that the Crimson Tide just brought in. And there's not a big difference between, in my opinion, when you get outside the top 6, top 7 of recruits. And it kind of depends on the draft class. But most years you get outside the top 7, you get about 7 through, 15, 18 range in the basketball recruiting rankings. All those guys are really stinking good. I mean, top 20, all of them are really good, but I'm tearing it off, as in 1 through 5, you've got a lottery player probably. 6 through, 15, they're all going to be really good basketball players too, and they're going to also have a chance at the lottery. Outside that 15, 16, they may go pro, they could go pro, but there also are going to be some experienced guys that might be going pro that year over those guys. It just depends. As you get away from that top 10, this is just common sense, players get a little bit worse and worse. And they have a higher bust chance. Basketball, it's obvious to look at a guy. If they're in the top 5, that guy's going pro at the end of the year. Jabari Smith, this is as close as it gets to getting to watch Kevin Durant in an Auburn uniform. For Auburn, that's going to be awesome. For Alabama, them bringing in small forward Brandon Miller. These guys brought in 2 top 60 players, 1 top 15 player in the same day. The same day. And by me saying that Alabama basketball right now is responding to what Auburn did, that's not in a derogatory way. It's obvious. Auburn showed up and took their basketball program to the next level before Alabama did. Now, does Alabama have a better basketball history than Auburn? Yes. I can't argue that. People will bring up the wins and the tournament history and all that over Auburn before Auburn went to the Final Four. I get that. But what I'm trying to say is Auburn took their program to the next level, national contention first. And now Alabama's doing it, and they're doing it in a big way, and honestly, in a concerning way. I mean, they're in the hunt for Jairus Walker. Guys that Auburn wants that are 5-stars, Alabama's right there with them too. This is the hottest arms race that we have seen in the state of Alabama in basketball ever. We have never seen it like this, ever. This arms race is off the charts right now. Auburn's out here going after top 15, top 10 players, which is foreign to Auburn people in the course of their basketball history. But now Alabama's doing it too, and they're all doing it at the same time. We've never seen this rivalry like this, to the point where Auburn and Alabama could both be Sweet 16, Elite 8 caliber programs at the same time. Name another rivalry in college basketball other than Duke, North Carolina, that's doing that on a consistent basis. Right now, Duke and North Carolina were outside of the top 25 last year and have been, honestly, a little bit more underwhelming than maybe, you know, Auburn and Alabama have over the last 3 years. Just saying. You talk about the big game, you talk about Ohio State, Michigan. Ohio State's had some of their lean years over the last decade, but they've came on over the last 2-3 years. Michigan, of course, has been one of the best postseason teams in college basketball over the last decade from a tournament, just winning games from that perspective. So that's another rivalry that I think you can look at. Ohio State, Michigan, Duke, North Carolina, Auburn, Alabama. Name another one where you're seeing these teams recruit like this and are now probably, if recruiting is an indication, which it is, they're going to be able to put together the records that Auburn and Alabama are going to do on a back-to-back basis. Name another rivalry. Brady, do you have one? Am I just forgetting something?
I think like maybe Kentucky, Tennessee, but like
no.
Tennessee is not.
And Kentucky's had some underwhelming years, to say the least.
Yeah, they've taken
Kentucky, Tennessee's not a bad one, and especially from a recruiting standpoint as well.
Recruiting wise, you could say they're definitely.
And those are each other's two biggest rivals. Mm-hmm. I would agree with that. And I'm talking about rivalries here. I'm not talking like anybody can pull out, well, Florida State and Duke, you know what I mean? Like anybody can pull any of the ACC cross matchups.
I'm talking
about rivalry, like the two biggest rivals against each other. I mean, Auburn, Alabama's now getting into that territory in basketball instead of just also football. Now, is it ever going to eclipse Duke, North Carolina? No way. Would it eclipse Duke, Kentucky if those teams played on a regular basis? No. And they do kind of play on a regular basis. Don't they play this year? It's Michigan State, Kansas, and then Duke, Kentucky play, I believe.
I believe that is, yes.
So they are playing on a regular basis. They're playing that Champions Classic every year.
Yeah.
So you do get to see it. I know Kentucky and Kansas play, and then some years Kentucky, Michigan State, so I get that. But and this is not one of the best rivalries in basketball. That's not what I'm trying to say. But from a competition standpoint and from a talent standpoint on the floor, this thing is trending in a direction that we've never seen it before. That's how exciting it is. And that's kind of what I thought about yesterday when I saw Alabama bring in those two players. That's going to make this basketball rivalry very fun. Right now, the Alabama recruiting class ranked number 10 nationally, 30 in the SEC, according to 24/7 Sports. It's an average rating of .9873. Last season, it was .9752, so they've upped the ante a little bit. Brandon Miller, the number 11 player nationally out of Antioch, Tennessee. Jaden Bradley out of IMG Academy, another five-star on this recruiting class, number 18 nationally, a point guard. And then Noah Clowney, number 62 player nationally, power forward, four-star in the recruiting class out of Roebuck, South Carolina, recruiting all across the Southeast. Alabama's scary right now in terms of recruiting. Moving on to our next headline of making headlines, LSU quarterback Miles Brennan, according to LSU head coach Ed Orgeron, will enter the transfer portal. And I'm curious to see what other major players at LSU, if they opt to enter the transfer portal, it's a coaching change. You're going to see guys leave. That just happens. A new regime's going to come in, and your ideals, what you thought college was going to be like, what you want out of your college football program, that may not line up with the new head coach. And I don't blame you if you want to leave, especially with the new transfer rule that allows you to not have to sit out if you've never transferred before. Yesterday, Jeremy Law suggested, would Kayshon Boutte stay? Miles Brennan's the first to go. I don't blame him. Max Johnson's won the job. In the absence of Miles Brennan, with Miles Brennan's injury, it makes sense for him to want to go and find somewhere else because Max Johnson has earned it. I don't see any reason why Max Johnson shouldn't be the starting quarterback at LSU. And there's a lot of arm talent there. There's a lot to work with there for the next head coach with Max Johnson. Pair him up with some good skill position players. Figure out a running game where it's not all on Max Johnson's shoulders. Things can work out for Max Johnson as the quarterback at LSU. Miles Brennan, I think there's a lot of arm talent there too. I think there's a lot of inconsistencies, a lot of inefficiencies there with Miles Brennan. A little trigger happy, throws a lot of picks. I think that's something you can look at with Miles Brennan. But he's going to make a Power 5 program very happy that needs a quarterback. I don't know if he's going to be in the SEC. I don't know where he's going to go, but Miles Brennan's a big one in the transfer portal. I don't think Bo Nix is going pro, but if Bo Nix were to go pro, I wouldn't mind taking 2/3 of the LSU quarterback room to bring Miles Brennan in.
I was thinking about that. That whole crew that they had last year, the whole three quarterback thing, They only have one of them now in that case.
And he's the best one. It makes sense. He's the best one. And I know people are probably looking at me weird right now, like, Bo Nix going pro? For the first time maybe ever, possibly ever, I need to throw this out there. I didn't throw this out there earlier when we were debunking misconceptions about Auburn football and we were talking about Bo Nix. I can't find a season. I didn't go back before 2004. I was on ESPN's website looking at stats. They didn't have anything prior to 2004. But I highly doubt Auburn did this in a year prior to 2004. And maybe they did it once or twice. But this is how much of an anomaly Auburn's passing game has been this year. I can't find a year other than this year right now that Auburn has averaged more than 250 passing yards per game. Auburn's averaging more than 250 passing yards per game this year. You were asking me earlier, you're like, man, I just want to see the guy hit 300 pass yards. And this is unfair, but there is a stigma that in today's game, if you don't hit 300, you may not be as good. You may have not have had an awesome performance. Auburn's averaging over 250 pass yards per game. They're sixth in the league at pass yards per game. I'm trying to remember years where Auburn wasn't in the bottom half of the league, you know? And they were exceptional seasons where Auburn wasn't in the bottom half of the league. It's 2004, 2010. Those are the types of years. Even 2013, Auburn was in the bottom half of the league because they didn't have to throw the football. But that's my point. It's like, I would like somebody to find that. Pass yards per game, when was the last time, if ever, has Auburn averaged more than 250 pass yards per game in a season? Because right now Auburn's doing it. Just saying. And so people look at me a little funny when I say, could Bo Nix go pro? He's engaged. Now, I don't want to say that he's thinking about going pro. He may not be thinking about going pro, but he is draft eligible. And I think there is more. There's more of a struggle to get Bo Nix to go pro than it was to get Jarrett Stidham to go pro. They're going pro at about Jarrett Stidham had been in college for a little bit more, but Bo Nix will have played more seasons in an Auburn jersey than Jarrett Stidham will have at the time that Jarrett Stidham went pro. And what, Jarrett Stidham only played at Baylor for like one season, I think, and then total college football years, Jarrett Stidham had played three. He had played three seasons of college football. Go check that for me, because I do think we need to fact check that. But either way, he may have only played one more season than Bo Nix did. And that one year can make a big difference. But the reason why I'm comparing Bo Nix's draft report to Jarrett Stidham's draft report is ask yourselves this question right here. Jarrett Stidham 2018 football season or Bo Nix 2021 football season, which quarterback would you want? Which quarterback performance you want? Now, granted, the schemes are different. Gus Malzahn's scheme was horrible for quarterbacks, and it regressed Jarrett Stidham. And if Jarrett Stidham was playing in this offense, he'd be having a field day. Heisman level, probably, if it was Jarrett Stidham. But the point that I'm trying to make, you were right, Brady, it was just one. So at the end of this year, Bo Nix will have played as many years in college football as Jarrett Stidham did. Jarrett Stidham had the 2017 season, as a solid basis, as a solid resume for him going pro. So much so that going into the 2018 season, everybody was like dark horse for the Heisman for Jarrett Stidham, right? And everybody loved the dude. Everybody was like, man, this dude's a bona fide second-round draft pick. There was already that narrative about him. And so a negative season from Jarrett Stidham in 2018, you could create the scapegoat, oh, it's the scheme. Oh, Gus Malzahn's not helping him out, right? And he gets drafted fourth, fifth round. I think he got drafted in the fourth round by the Patriots. He gets drafted in the fourth round. I know he got drafted by the Patriots, but I think it was the fourth round. Regardless, it wasn't later than the fifth, I don't think. He gets drafted. It was the fourth round, right? So he gets drafted on the fourth round by the Patriots, and everybody's kind of cutting him. He regressed a little bit. His draft stock dropped, but they at least maybe, you know, wrote it off to the scheme, and they said, oh, this is a match made in heaven. This is the replacement for Tom Brady. This is the next guy in line. Why is Bo Nix not getting the same slack in terms of his draft report? Why are people not saying, oh, this is, like, if Bo Nix had gotten to play in this system for 3 years, I don't think he would have had all the negatives maybe that he had the first two seasons. It wouldn't be nearly as bad. And so what I'm trying to say is the starting point for Bo Nix has been much lower than what it was for Jarrett Stidham in terms of their perception in the NFL draft world. Bo Nix is having to overcome a lot of negative perceptions about him, whereas Jarrett Stidham already had positive perceptions about him. It was just one bad season in 2018. Whereas Bo Nix this season is having to overcome some of that. I think what we're seeing out of Bo Nix is trending in the direction of this guy can play in the NFL. Will he start in the NFL? I don't know. But I'm just saying get drafted. That's maybe I should qualify that a little bit better. Get drafted. This guy can get drafted and be on a team in the NFL. I do. I think it's heading in that direction. Will he go at the end of this year? I think there's a lot more going up against him in terms of the report, in terms of his draft report, because of the first two seasons at Auburn. But what we're seeing out of him this year definitely could lend a hand. If he did this again next year, he could go pro. I do believe that. And so if he were to go pro after this year, Miles Brennan's out there. Spencer Rattler could be out there. There's some other guys out there that you could go after. When we come back on the other side of this break, we're going to talk about those college football playoff rankings that come out tonight. You're listening to On the Line. Tuesday edition of On the Line. Noah Gardner, Brady Summersell behind the controls on ESPN 106.7 and Fox Sports Central Alabama. Number to call, 334-321-1390. Text line at 334-564-1840. We want to hear from you. Anything on your mind in the sports world? College football playoff rankings, first edition of the 2021 season, come out tonight. What is your top four? And would you have Cincinnati in it? Call me. I want to know. 334-321-1390. First college football playoff rankings come out tonight. Earlier on in the show, I said Georgia would be my number one. Alabama would be my number two. I didn't get to go too far into why I would have Alabama at number two, so that's where I'm going to start right here, is giving you my top four teams in tonight's release of the college football playoff rankings. Number one, Georgia. Georgia has put together the best resume in college football. They have four wins over ranked teams at the time that they played them. Nobody else is really around that same mark. They dominated every team put in front of them since the Clemson game. Georgia should be number one. Nobody's arguing with that, so I'm not going to stay there too long. And once again, this is my top four, not what's actually going to be revealed tonight, because I do think that's going to be different. Number two, I'm going Alabama. Now, this is probably going to make some folks around here angry, because Alabama did lose, and I get that. But the motto, the slogan, when this committee gets something wrong, the thing that they go to every time, the crutch for this committee, when they put the awkward guy on television that has to go and answer for the rankings every week on TV and they ask him and grill him questions, he says, we want to put the four best teams in. We want to put and rank these teams based on who we think is better than each other. Alabama, to me, in my mind, is the second best team in college football. If I put them on the same field as Michigan State, the team that only beat Indiana by five, who wins? Alabama or Michigan State? And granted, Michigan State may give them some trouble, and there's a better chance that Alabama gets upset by Michigan State than maybe they do by Cincinnati, but I still think Alabama's the better team over Michigan State. Bryce Young or Peyton Thorne, who do you like more? You like Bryce Young. You don't even have to think about it. Alabama over Michigan State. Alabama versus Oklahoma. Which Oklahoma do we get? Oklahoma's like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. Are you going to get the one that all of a sudden has Kansas thinking it's the apocalypse? Or do you have the one that can beat Texas after being down 28-7? Do you get second half Oklahoma? Or do you get first half Oklahoma? That's the question, right? But I think with consistency, would Oklahoma and Michigan State, With regards to consistency, what we've seen out of those two football teams, don't get caught up in recency bias with what Michigan State did this past game against Michigan, which I still think Michigan was the better team in that game. And I think if you played that game again 10 times, Michigan wins 9 out of those 10 times, I think, with the way that game unfolded. But if you put Michigan State and Oklahoma on the Alabama football schedule, if they had to play the exact same schedule, would those teams still be undefeated? So if you're over here using the Alabama loss as a reason why they shouldn't be number two, that's just my take on it. I'm going towards the direction that, yes, resume is important. Eye test is important too. And which teams do I think are the best teams? Which teams do I think are better? I think Alabama is better than Michigan State and Oklahoma. Three, I do have Michigan State. And this is where, yeah, I think you're just kind of, there's not a whole lot separating these two teams between the resume. They actually have a common opponent. They both played Nebraska. Michigan State needed overtime to beat them 23-20. Oklahoma beat them 23-16. They've both played really disappointing schedules outside of their one big game, which the one big game for Oklahoma was Texas, 1-7. The one big game for Michigan State was Michigan, 1-4. The more impressive victory on these two resumes is Michigan over the Texas. So when I'm looking at this and I say, what Michigan State team's going to show up in this game, what Oklahoma team shows up, I don't know which of these teams is better. I don't. So I'm having to defer to resume. And for me, resume, it's better for Michigan State than it is for Oklahoma at this point. So that's why I got Michigan State at 3. I got Oklahoma at 4. On the other side of this break, I'll tell you why I don't want to see Cincinnati in the top 4 tonight. We'll break down some of the other teams outside of the top 4. You're listening to On the Line. You're on the line with Noah Gardner on ESPN 106.7 and Fox Sports Central Alabama. Number to call, 334-321-1390. Our text line at 334-564-1840. Fun show so far today. Talked about incorrect narratives, debunking those narratives with Auburn football.
Auburn's defense isn't good. They give up a lot of yards. Bo Nix throws the football too hard.
You're wrong. He throws the football at an appropriate speed. And that defense, while it does give up yards, keeps him off the scoreboard. Held Ole Miss to 20 points. Auburn's offensive line is also something that we should be talking about in a positive light. Special teams. Give my man Oscar Chapman some love. The Australian hammer. The reason why I'm calling him that is because there's the Scottish hammer. That's the punter for the Cleveland Browns, Jamie Gillen. Oscar Chapman, man, unreal. One of the best punters I have seen in an Auburn uniform. That's not doing him enough justice. He's the best Auburn punter I've seen in an Auburn uniform, at least the way he's punting right now. But that was what we talked about for a large portion of today's show. Now we're talking about the top four college football playoff rankings being released tonight. Who should the top four teams be? It's my reasoning on why my top four is the way it is. It will not be what the top four looks like tonight. I do think Cincinnati will be in the top four tonight. I hope they're not. I don't think they deserve to be. Who have they beaten, Brady? Who have they beaten?
Notre Dame.
That's it. Outside of Notre Dame. And do you really think that's that great of a win?
Where they have Notre Dame in the poll right now is, what, like 9 or 10, I think?
Notre Dame is the biggest enemy to all of college football right now. And I'm not Lance Daw, okay? I mean this, okay? Notre Dame is the enemy to all of college football right now. You know why? You don't know why? Because if they continue to win and they continue to increase in ranking, Cincinnati's resume looks sexier on a week-to-week basis.
It's one ranked win, though.
It is just one ranked win. And you look at all the other teams they've beaten. Miami, Ohio, Murray State. Indiana's winless in the Big Ten, unless they won this past weekend. But based on how the season's been going, I doubt it. I just quit paying attention to them. Temple's awful. UCF has half their team hurt. Navy's bad. Tulane's awful. And they've struggled the last 2 weeks. They have looked very poor the last 2 weeks.
That offense is a little bit scary. Like that, they might lose a game towards the end of this year because of their offense.
Desmond Ridder threw for 140 yards against UCF, 176 against Navy, and 227 against Tulane. Didn't look great against Indiana earlier in the year, 210. He played really well against Notre Dame, 297, second half really. But the Cincinnati schedule is not that far off from what the Conference USA looked like a few years ago, with the exception of you got to play Notre Dame and Indiana in your non-conference. You take those two teams out, which you can. I mean, that is on the resume. But right now, Indiana, once again, I have stopped watching this team. They're on a 4-game losing streak, just lost to Maryland. They're 2-6 this year. That win means nothing to me now. Congratulations. If anything, you played bad against a team you should have beat a lot worse. And Indiana had a chance to turn around their season there. And then you've beaten Notre Dame, which, yes, is a good win. I do think that that should qualify as a positive win. But that's it. That's all you've done. Outside of that, everybody else you play is 1-6. 1-7. Good for you. You got to play Tulane. The same reasoning that I asked about Michigan State and Oklahoma. If Cincinnati played Alabama's schedule, are they undefeated?
No.
I don't think they are. I think they lose to A&M. I think they may lose to Ole Miss. There are a lot of teams in the AP Top 25 right now that I would like in a game over Cincinnati if they play tomorrow. Ohio State I would like over Cincinnati. If Penn State plays the way they did against Ohio State, I would take Penn State over Cincinnati. Now, you can't average 1.8 yards per carry or whatever they did, but still, they scored 24 on Ohio State. That could be enough to beat Cincinnati with the way they're playing right now. And sure, everybody say, well, those are hypotheticals, and look at the resume, and they're undefeated. They deserve a chance. Do they? Does beating Temple qualify you? Temple and Tulane qualify you for a seat at the table with the big boys that are having to play four times the amount of good teams that you're playing on a week-to-week basis? I don't want to see them in the top four tonight, but I think they are, and here's why they're going to be tonight. Because they started higher this year in the AP poll than they did last season. Cincinnati worked their way from a further back starting spot last season to where they started this year. Cincinnati is number two in the AP poll because of the way the AP poll works. They started in the top 10. What did they start, like eight? Somewhere in the 6 to 8 range, I think. They started around there. They started winning. Everybody else started losing around them. So by default, they just ended up at number two because that's how the AP poll works. And all the writers, they're going to love Cincinnati. It's people just fall in love with those types of teams. They're going to give them the benefit of the doubt. Brady?
Preseason, the AP had them at number eight behind Iowa State and ahead of Notre Dame.
Last year, did they start at number eight? No, they didn't.
Absolutely not.
And so it took them, they had to come from a lot further back, and so by the time you get to the end of the year, they're not going to get that respect, but they started where they did this year. That helped them get to the point where they're at right now. Will the college football playoff afford them that same luxury? The college football playoff, on many different occasions, has said, we don't take a look at last year's results. But I wonder if that is going to be in their subconscious when they're ranking this Cincinnati team. And I think we would all be lying to ourselves if we said that it's not. I've even said it on a couple occasions that I have a little bit more respect for this Cincinnati team this year than I did for them last year. And my reasoning for that is how they played Georgia in the bowl game. And then they've continued to win this year. I'm not saying that what Cincinnati hasn't done I'm not saying it's not impressive. Good for them. I think they're a good team. I'm not saying that they wouldn't go to a bowl game if they played in the SEC. That's ridiculous. They're a good football team. I'm just saying, would they be a college football playoff team if they played in a Power 5 conference? Would they lose two or more games? Probably. Probably. And we're not going to get to see that, but I just don't think that they should get a pass to the top four. And sure, many people out there would say, well, it's not their fault that teams don't play them. It's not their fault that they play in that league. But it's also not every other team in college football's fault either. And it goes both ways. You know what I mean? And I think at the end of the day, this problem is solved if we all come to the table and say, who are the four best teams in college football? And if you legitimately believe that Cincinnati is one of the four best teams in college football with what you watch on Saturday when they play Tulane and Navy, that's fine. Rank them in your top four. But I don't believe that. I don't believe they're one of the best four teams in college football. I don't think they've been playing like it. There are other teams that deserve it maybe a little bit more than they do at this point. That's why they're not in my top four. Will they be in the top four tonight? I'll be interested. Last year at this point, with Cincinnati's resume, they'd be in the top 10. They'd be at, you know, somewhere probably between 6 and 8 with that win over Notre Dame. But would they be in the top four if this was last year? No, they wouldn't. So we're going to find out tonight. This committee can say all they want that they don't look at last year's results. But to me, last year will be helping out this Cincinnati team if they're inside the top four. And I don't think it's wrong to say that. I don't think they've done enough to get in there right now. I mean, this Cincinnati team struggling with Tulane and Navy. So I don't want to see them there. Where would I have them? Looking at the AP top 25 poll, I mean, I've said that there are a decent amount of teams that I would take over Cincinnati right now that I think would give them really good games. I without even thinking, 6 through 1 right now in the AP poll, excluding Cincinnati, of course, I would take over them in a football game. I would take Ohio State to beat them. I don't like the way Oregon's playing right now. I think there's another loss on their schedule at some point to somebody that they probably shouldn't lose to. They could lose in the conference title game. I think this Oregon team's a little bit overrated. Cincinnati-Oregon would be a pretty good game. They already beat Notre Dame. Michigan would beat Cincinnati. Wake Forest would lose to Cincinnati. I don't think Wake Forest is very good. Oklahoma State-Cincinnati, I think, would be a pretty good football game. I think that would be a very good football game. Auburn-Cincinnati, I think, would be a very good football game. With the way that Auburn's playing right now and the way the Cincinnati offense is playing, I think Auburn could limit them a lot. Baylor-Cincinnati would be an excellent football game with the way Baylor's playing right now. Baylor's ranked 14th in the AP poll, guys. If you're having to go as far down as 14 or 15 and you have doubt whether or not Cincinnati would beat that football team, maybe it's time to adjust your expectations for who should be in the college football playoff or not. Would Ole Miss give Cincinnati a good game? Are you sure that... What, go ahead, Brady.
A healthy Ole Miss. A fully healthy Ole Miss would definitely give Cincinnati a run for their money.
I think BYU-Cincinnati would be a fun football game. BYU at 17 in the polls. You know? UTSA and Cincinnati right now. The big difference there is that UTSA didn't play Notre Dame. Would UTSA have been able to beat Notre Dame? You don't think so? You don't like that UTSA team?
I mean, Notre Dame still... a really good team.
They're getting there.
But
they're a lot better now than when they played Cincinnati.
Yes. I just don't think UTSA would have the same success that Cincinnati would have against them.
I'm just really curious to see where Cincinnati's going to be at in this rankings tonight.
I think we could see the biggest discrepancy with the AP poll with Cincinnati.
Do you think they'll be ranked inside the top four?
I think the college football playoff will probably drop them down to like six, just based on resume.
I will be grinning ear to ear if that happens.
I have a feeling that they might drop them out of the top four completely.
They don't deserve to be in the top four. Who do you think are the four best teams in the country? Ask yourself that. And if Cincinnati's a part of it, fine, but they're not a part of mine. Let's talk about who are the biggest winners of the weekend, biggest losers of the weekend, as we did last week. Looking through college football, I prepared a list of winners and losers as we get ready to wrap up the show. About 16 minutes left here in the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Following me today, we'll have Bill Cameron and Dan Pack from 4 to 6. The Drive on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. They'll be taking your calls. I'm taking your calls as well. 334-321-1390 is how you can get through to On the Line. Anything on your mind in the sports world, I want to hear from you. What are your thoughts? How do you think the college football playoff rankings will come out tonight? Debunked a lot of wrong and incorrect narratives for Auburn football. What are some that you have that you've heard that irritate you? That you think are incorrect about this Auburn football team. We want to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Biggest winners of the weekend. At the top of my list, it's Georgia. It's week 10, and the Bulldogs have already clinched their spot in the SEC championship. Is this the earliest that it's ever happened? Good gracious. We just hit double digits in weeks of college football, and we already know who's going to a conference championship. Winner. Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
That East is pretty weak, but, I mean, they are just levels above anybody. Even in that weak division, they're still levels above everybody in that division.
They're leveling everybody in that division. They've lapped everybody.
I think they're about 2-3 laps ahead. Like
Georgia's the try-hard in gym class that ran laps around everybody when we had to run the mile, okay? They're already sitting over there. They're done. They ran their 6-minute mile. Everybody else is still walking it. They're over there gassed, but they finished the mile, right? And now they're getting to rest for a little bit. And Georgia's schedule's easy down the stretch, man. Tennessee's their biggest test. A 4-4 Tennessee team. Are people even going to be watching Georgia over the next 4 weeks?
They will, just because they're going to be the number one team in the nation, and they want to see them fail.
What's going to happen to Missouri this 11 a.m.? Exactly. Yeah.
Things we can't talk about on radio.
Miami, a team from the state of Florida. Florida's a loser this weekend, not a winner. Miami is a biggest winner of the weekend. The Hurricanes needed to pull an upset to feel more confident about going to a bowl game, but with a remaining schedule of Georgia Tech, Florida State, Virginia Tech, and Duke, pretty easy. I mean, you can do that. I mean, this is the ACC, but you can win all of those games. Miami could win out and finish 8-4. And Manny Diaz was on the hot seat. Like, you thought it was over in Miami. I thought we were going to have a coaching carousel. Florida State, Miami, Wisconsin, LSU, USC, Penn State possibly if James Franklin left that job. Wisconsin's turned it around. Miami's turning it around. And I think with that schedule, you can say they have turned it around. Florida State's playing a lot better. I don't know if they're going to move on from Norvell. They're still 3-5. They need to etch out some wins here. Florida's now turning into the direction of being in the coaching carousel. And then you already know that LSU and USC are open right now. TCU has entered the picture also after Gary Patterson left. Very, very intriguing coaching carousel, but I don't think Miami's going to be a part of it. That upset over Pittsburgh is going to get this team to a bowl game. These guys could finish 9 wins. Tyler Van Dyke's good. He has been the key to this Rhett Lashley offense. I don't know what's happened, but they're actually able to throw the football. And this Miami offense finally looks like it did when Rhett Lashley was with Sonny Dykes at SMU. That's what this looks like. They rediscovered how to pass the football. West Virginia, a big winner of the weekend, similar to Miami, but more dire. West Virginia really needed a win over Iowa State to put them in a position for bowl eligibility. They're at 4-4 now. The remaining schedule is against Oklahoma State, Kansas State, Texas, and Kansas. So they're probably not going to be favored in 3 of those games. They'll be favored over Kansas. They won't be favored over the other 3. They need to pull one more upset and beat Kansas to go bowling. I think that's possible. Texas is 4-4. Texas, Florida, Miami, and West Virginia all have the same record as South Carolina. There's your fun fact of the day. And what is USC right now? Is USC like 4-4 too? 3-5, something like that? Brady's going to find that for me. USC may be worse than that. That is absolutely crazy. Wouldn't have expected that at this point in the year. And Kentucky's got two more wins than all of them. They're 6-2. USC's 4-4. So Texas, West Virginia, USC, Florida, and Miami all have the same record as South Carolina at 4-4. The year is 2021, ladies and gentlemen. Unreal. Unreal. Another winner this weekend, Notre Dame. For as rocky as this season has been for both Notre Dame and North Carolina, this was a big win on this Saturday for the Fighting Irish. The remaining schedule is easy for them. There's no reason why they shouldn't win out. The offense is continuing to take steps in the right direction. I don't see another loss on the Notre Dame schedule with the way they're playing. This is why I said they're the enemy of college football, because as they continue to win, Cincinnati continues to win, their resume looks a lot better if Notre Dame gets pretty close to the top 4, right? Just to be able to say that you beat a top 6 team, you know? I'm interested to see where Notre Dame falls in the rankings tonight, because Notre Dame really hasn't beaten anybody. Their one challenge that they had, the one significant challenge that they had, and you can say that's Wisconsin, but Wisconsin was awful back then. The one significant challenge that they had, they lost, and they lost by double digits to Cincinnati. So, like, what has Notre Dame done this year? As much as we want to harp on Cincinnati, what has Notre Dame done this year?
They'll get the love because Wisconsin was ranked at the time.
And they beat them 41-13, but if you watch that game, it was not 41-13.
No, it did not happen until that last 15 minutes.
Even if Notre Dame does win out and Cincinnati loses, I still don't think they get in the playoff. I think the committee at the end of the day will evaluate that body of work and see that it is not substantial enough to get them there. But as Notre Dame keeps winning, that Cincinnati resume does look better. That's a domino that is falling in college football. Not the way that if somebody wants to see two SEC teams into the top four, you want Notre Dame and Cincinnati to lose. You want it bad. I want it bad. If I want to see Auburn make the playoff, Auburn winning out, I want to see one of those teams lose, namely Cincinnati. But let's take a quick break here on On the Line. When we come back, I'll talk about biggest losers of the weekend. You're listening to On the Line. Wrapping up the Tuesday edition of On the Line, Noah Gardner here with you on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. Just a couple of minutes left, and then it'll be The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Pack taking your calls. 10 years ago, it's 2011. A time traveler visits you. What are you doing? I don't know. Me? I'm probably playing a college football video game. I'm watching College Game Day. I don't know what I'm doing. But a time traveler comes and visits me and tells me that Cincinnati is ranked number 2 in the country, 8-0. Wake Forest is ranked number 10, 8-0. Baylor is ranked 14, 7-1. UTSA is 16, 8-0. BYU 17, 7-2. Kentucky is 18, 6-2. Iowa is 19, 6-2. Houston is 20, 7-1. Coastal Carolina, we didn't even know that team existed, ranked 21, 7-1. SMU is 23, 7-1. 24 is Louisiana Lafayette, 7-1. And 25 is Fresno State, 7-2. LSU's not ranked. USC's not ranked. Texas isn't ranked. They all have the same 4-4 record as Rutgers and South Carolina. What are you thinking? Has the world ended? My response is, where is Kansas? What's going on? Has things changed for them? No. Somehow it managed to get worse for Kansas in the last decade instead of better. At the time of 2011, somehow Kansas was 3 or 4 years removed from a BCS bowl game. So was Illinois. And those teams' fortunes have gotten worse, whereas Wake Forest, Kentucky, the year is 2021, Brady, and that is our AP Top 25. Bizarre. We got about a minute left here in the show. If you missed any of today's show, go and find the podcast wherever you get your podcast. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio. Yeah, to those of you in the future, we salute you. I wonder what this is going to look like in another 10 years. Well, if Tennessee beaten Alabama, that's my final take of today. Ending the show, and I want to start doing this on a daily basis. Final takes. My final take here is, looking at this AP Top 25 poll, what would we have thought about this 10 years ago? I don't even know if we would have had words for this. And we were only a couple of years removed from the wild year that was 2008, 2007, the year that Kansas and Illinois played in BCS games. We weren't that far away. But man, this year's on another level. This year's on another level. My question to you is, Brady, before we get out of here, is it good? Is this good for the game? Do we like this year?
I do believe chaos can be good. No one's really great besides Georgia at the moment. Having all those different teams really makes it feel like, oh, I get to watch all these other games and be entertained.
Everything matters right now. I even think it matters for Georgia. Georgia may be cruising from here out, but I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that they're winning the Natty this year. It was a fun edition of On the Line, Tuesday edition, all in the books. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Same time, same place. You know where to find us.